I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Hole in the Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by webmaster of Krypton Site and K-Site TV, Mr. Craig Byrne. What's up, Craig?
Hey, good to be here again.
So, Craig, this is the 101st episode of Smallville, following up Reckoning. And I think you and I were kind of both in the same boat as far as, at the time, kind of enjoying Vengeance more than Reckoning. Is that correct?
Yes. I think the issue was, in Reckoning, we were expecting a big death. We were expecting emotions, which we did get. So dramatically, it was really good. And it showed us how the series was changing after the death of Jonathan Kent. Spoiler warning if you guys haven't seen Reckoning.
Yeah. Or this episode, or pretty much any episode after it. But yeah, there was just so much going on in Reckoning, you know, time travel and elections, and then, you know, of course, you have Jonathan's death at the end, and then there's a funeral, and then boom, it's over. And I thought that it was really smart that they took another episode, and of course, really, and to the show's credit, the rest of the series is really factors in the fact that Jonathan has died, and Clark carries that with him. And I think it was really smart to follow up that huge episode with an episode like this to really address the emotional side of things. And then they decided to throw in kind of not Batman on top of that, right?
And not Batman's music, apparently.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So I distinctly remember in Arrow, the episode Arrow in season 6, like there's like literally the Batman chords. And we had talked about this on and off, doing, you know, on and off microphone of the podcast. And I believe you and many other people had mentioned that, you know, they use it in Vengeance too. It's like, oh, I don't really remember that. But no, there were at least two times where,
yeah,
I mean, there's lots of Batman tones going on, but there were two times that is straight up Batman music.
It's weird because if you watch the episode now, like thinking of what the CW is like today, where there's a superhero on every corner, you would imagine that Batman might have been introduced in Smallville episode 101. Mm-hmm. And that would, like, he could have seen somebody else's approach, and that kind of taught him a lesson in controlling his anger. I think that's the other thing I liked about this episode, is Clark learned lessons. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like a growing experience, and it's like he doesn't know how to deal with this grief. I mean, we all go through grief, but when you're Superman, you know, your feelings are kind of heightened a bit. And, you know, Jonathan Kent kind of kept him grounded in his humanity, in right and wrong, and to lose that guiding force, at least until he shows up as a force ghost a couple times later, is, you know, I don't know what the word is, catastrophic. That's probably too big of a word, but it changes him a lot.
Yeah, and in Smallville, the official companion season 5 by Craig Byrne.
Oh.
Available wherever books are sold. Greg Beeman had this to say about bringing in a Batman-type character. He said, quote, "We wanted Clark to experience the dark side. We wanted to basically create a Batman character, a dark hero, and have Clark come up against what that experience was going to be like and really choose that that was who he was going to become." And he goes on to mention how they had hopes of getting Batman. And he says, quote, "Of course, in the beginning, we were very hopeful about it in seasons 1 and 2, but it kept being fended off. And when Batman Begins came out, it was lost." So, with Batman's back on the big screen, any hope of potentially getting Batman on Smallville, that ended with the Dark Knight trilogy. So,
okay, see, how long has it been? 14 years since I wrote that book?
You don't remember this interview, Craig?
I know where I did the interview. We actually did the interview in Beeman's production office at Heroes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Because this was actually his last episode before he moved over to Heroes, right?
Right. Well, no. He moved over to the Aquaman pilot first.
That's right. That's
and
right.
When that didn't go, he went on to Heroes. And I should point out that Denise Quiñones,
yes,
who played Andrea Rojas, ended up being the female lead, essentially, in Aquaman. Mm-hmm. So, hashtag it's all connected.
It is interesting how it's like, you would assume this would be a spin, like, you're right, if this, yes, was on the CW today, this would be a spinoff, and then you an Angel of Vengeance show or something. But back then, it was like, oh, well, no, we have these producers and behind-the-scenes people, and they like these actors and these things, and these characters and these things. So it's like, yeah, Smallville Season 5, the spinoff was the Aquaman show, but they took actors and behind-the-scenes people and characters, but none of the same intersection. Like, Alan Richardson was not Aquaman in that show, and, you know, the Angel of Vengeance didn't show up, but the actors did. So, interesting, I thought.
Well, and also, another actress from that pilot, who played his friend, was in Wither.
Oh, that, yes!
I don't know her name anymore.
Yes, the Poison Ivy.
From, yeah. Wither. Yeah, so I mean,
the Supergirl, TV's Wonder Woman.
Oh, Adrienne Palicki.
Adrienne Palicki.
Mockingbird.
Yeah. So it's all connected. It really is all connected, people.
Yeah. But as far as, like, you know, spinning off a character, it was, I mean, they did do the Vengeance Chronicles web series.
Yes, yes.
Which I don't even remember. I was thinking about that when I was watching the episode. Is that on the DVDs?
It is. It is. And I'll be covering those in between seasons 5 and 6.
Okay, because I need to rewatch those because I don't remember them at all. But it's surprising that character, aside from that, never came back. I mean, she could have been part of their Justice League.
But she killed someone, Craig. And she knows Clark for this whole years, day.
How many years was Arrow on the air?
8 years.
And didn't he kill somebody in, like, the second scene?
Exactly.
Wasn't his series finale about not killing?
Yeah. Well, the thing about this character of the Angel of Vengeance was I thought that Smallville had invented her. I was like, we need a Batman, Wonder Woman kind of mix, and because we can't use those characters. But no, this is a character who debuted, again, I'm getting these facts from The Companion, so thank you, in Superman Annual number 12, and her name was Akrata. That was her superhero name, and that is the name they used for the organization that her mom was head of, and why she was had a hit up put out on her by Lionel Luthor in this episode. So there are seeds of that original version, but it's great. You look at a character like this, and you totally think this is invented for the show because we can't use Batman. But it was news to me that she was a real comic character.
We're gonna call her Chloe Sullivan because we can't use Lois,
right? Exactly.
On a Lois note, though, when I'm watching this episode, I was thinking about how all of the characters who were in this episode were very, very well used, but Lois wasn't there.
Well, season 5, right? I mean, they haven't, they still haven't figured out how do we have Chloe and Lois, so we'll just continue to have Chloe be Lois, and we'll get to Lois at some point.
Yeah, but it was really, you know, like, you kind of forget the Smallville timeline, the year or two where, you know, Erica was only in like, well, actually, it was probably more than 2 years where Erica was only in like 13 of them. And so she wasn't quite the female lead yet. Yes, I said it. You know, obviously, at the end, she definitely was the female lead of the show. But, you know, not in a versus Chloe thing. Obviously, Chloe was another female lead. But you know what I mean.
Well, you know, and speaking of this, the Smallville timeline itself, I did want to bring this up. The elections happened in November, and the election of Jonathan Kent and Lex Luthor, the race they were in, would have been in November. It wasn't a recall election. It's not like a Batman Return situation where it's later, you know, they recall the mayor and they have an election. So, and I understand the episode aired in January.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at his tombstone, theoretically, his death date should be, you know, November, probably a single digit after November 2005.
Sorry, Zach, but wasn't it 2017 when Lex Luthor was elected president?
So 2018.
2018. Elections are completely messed up.
Well, the reason I bring this up is when we eventually see Jonathan Kent's headstone, first of all, his birth date is September 1st, 1954, which is already a continuity error, because in 1961, as we saw in Relic, his mom was pregnant with him. So he was born in 1961. So they're off there. And then his death date is January 26, 2006, which is the air date of Reckoning. But again, it's an election, so it should have been November. So
and John Schneider was born in 1960.
Yeah, so that was closer. Like the original, like, oh, yeah. Jonathan is a baby in 1961. That makes sense for John Schneider's age. But then they changed. I don't know why they changed the birth date. And then they got the. Anyway, typical Smallville.
Well, maybe the air date was like a famous episode of the Adventures of Superman TV series or something.
Maybe.
But the other thing I'm thinking, though, is if he was born in 1954, that means he was 35 in the flashback in the pilot. Mm-hmm. I got the impression he and Martha were supposed to be in their 20s, though.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess they were younger. Hey, John Schneider and Ed O'Toole could both play older and younger, as we see in this episode on the videotape. So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Schneider, even now, I think it's his long hair and stuff, looks younger than he is.
Oh, definitely.
Because he'll be 60 this year.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe he was older than Tom when he did that pilot. Tom now.
Right.
Just a side note, because, you know, I go on my tangents. I don't know if you saw the interview that Tom Welling did a panel at a convention this weekend. And he said when he did Crisis, he was kind of trying to channel Jonathan Kent a bit. Mm-hmm. And like move like Jonathan Kent did and have reactions kind of like that, because that's who raised him. And I thought that was really cool. So basically, Jonathan still had an effect on Clark however many years later.
Yeah, no, I like that as well, him mentioning that. And it's some thoughtfulness put into the role from Welling, which is nice, because you never know. Obviously, people have read your articles, people hear what I said, but you and I are on the same page of Crisis. I like that ending for this
part. Yeah, me too.
People seem up in arms about it, and I understand why people might be disappointed, but that was the Clark I knew from 10 Years of Smallville, and I think it was fitting.
It's also like, and I'm going to sound like Tom here, but the movie The Neverending Story should have never had sequels. It was best to picture what happens at the end just continuing forever. In the case of Clark being Superman, it happened. It will probably happen again. I'm talking about Welling's Clark. We might not get to go on that journey. But what's in our minds is probably better than what they would have done anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you're so, right. I mean, how many times have we seen him get his powers back at some point, right? So
yeah, my theory, and I think I posted on Krypton's site, is that on Earth 167, everything's covered. You've got the Justice League taking care of everything. He wanted to be able, you know, maybe something put Lois and the kids in danger, and he just wanted to be able to be with them. But I'm sure the second he'd need his powers again to, you know, knock out President Lex or whatever, he just gets in the kryptonite sauna or whatever it was, like in Superman 2?
2, yes.
Yeah. And boom, he's Superman again. So we just happened to catch him the week he didn't have his powers.
Well, there you go. Well, there's your pregame. Let's get into it now. Vengeance.
I just spent half the night down at Metropolis PD. There's not one person down there who can tell me anything about who mugged my mom.
Now, I've got that covered. My mole down at the precinct said that he faxed me the police report as soon as he got it. So your mom actually saw the vigilante?
Barely. She left just before the police got there.
Do you know that there have been rumors about her flying around suicide slums for weeks? But I couldn't get a confirmed eyewitness until your mom. Now, this has front page news written all over it. The vigilante is for real.
This is great, Chloe. I let my mom go down to suicide slums alone. She gets mugged, and you're cashing in on it.
Clark, I was just trying to help. You don't have to bite my head off.
I should have just accepted the watch like my dad would have wanted. I couldn't even look at it. Now all I can think about is getting it back.
Vengeance is the 13th episode of Smallville's 5th season. It aired on February 2nd, 2006. It was written by L. Sipton and Turi Meyer, and directed by Jeno Swark. February 2nd, Groundhog Day, Craig. So, you know, had they aired Reckoning on Groundhog Day, that could have been a Groundhog Day episode, because a repeating day, it would make more sense. But anyway.
I should also point out, Jeno directed the 1984 Supergirl movie.
And Somewhere in Time, with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour.
Both of whom appeared on Smallville.
Smallville guest stars. That's right. So we get in this episode and we start out, and they've added a storm special effect over the Kent Farm establishing shot because Clark is in a bad mood, right? That was a little touch I I saw what they were doing there. And he's doing some farm work, and he's obviously frustrated. He's breaking stuff. There's a really cool shot of Martha when she comes to the barn, and Clark sees her in the side mirror of the tractor. So that was a cool reveal. Genos worker, you know, a great director, so he's got some good flourishes here. And she comes in the barn, and we find out that Clark is a college dropout, guys.
So there's a history of him quitting things to work on the farm.
There you go. It's just, again, in character. Okay.
Yeah.
So too much work here to be done. I got to drop out of school. So this is the beginning of Clark being a college dropout and not doing anything with his professional life until the beginning of season 8.
Yeah.
Which is a problem, I think. We joke about it. Again, they didn't know they were going to last so long. We get this.
Well, I was thinking about that, too. It's like, you know, you killed Jonathan Kent in episode 100. How would they have known they would have 118 episodes after it?
Right.
Like, you would have thought you were nearing the end point, or at least, like, 75% through at this point.
Do you wish he would have stayed in college? I mean, like, do you have to do the same, like, gotta go to class stuff? Like, I don't know. Like, for what they did with the show, it makes sense that they didn't have him go into class and those kinds of things.
I really liked what was proposed before season 5 premiered, which is that he would be going to college, you would have Professor Fine as like a bad influence, but then they only had James Marsters for a limited amount of episodes. Mm-hmm. So that kind of derailed that whole story idea. What I found more of like a weird jump was, so Chloe was hired the Daily Planet and Thirst. Mm-hmm. And now she's laying out front page articles.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, she hopes it's a front page article. But
yeah,
that's not exactly something you have the interns doing, though, do you? So
yeah, it just was very bizarre. It'd be like, mm-hmm. you know, a 16-year-old running a website with TV show scoops or something.
Or a freshman being the editor of her high school newspaper and being the only person on staff. So
to be fair, I was editor of my high school paper sophomore year.
But there were other people on staff, weren't there?
There were, but...
Did you publish daily, Craig? I don't think
no.
So.
Okay, fine. Stop poking holes in this.
Martha, she has a box of Jonathan's things, some clothes and things, and she's going into Metropolis because the governor's office wants to talk to her because obviously Jonathan was elected senator and he died, so ergo, she would replace him. That it happens in the real world. That's one thing that Smallville does have right about real world politics. That is what happens. And she says, well, I figure while I'm down there, I drop a lot of Jonathan's things off at the homeless shelter. And she has this watch. And usually I would be like, we've never heard of this watch before. This is ridiculous. But we've always seen Jonathan and Clark wear watches. So even though they didn't like make a thing about it before, I don't think this is some ridiculous like item they made up to give significance to for the plot of this episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but on the subject of like poking holes in the plot, why didn't she just send Clark to take this stuff to Metropolis so he can get there faster?
Because there's too much work to do on the farm, Greg. He couldn't even go to school.
These cows won't milk themselves, son.
That's right. Exactly. But yeah, Clark is obviously grieving and he's in a bad place and that's very obvious, but he's like, I mean, yeah, he's telling his mom. His mom's like, oh, I remember your dad taught you time on this watch. He wants you to have it. He's like, oh, that's great. You should wear it. Like, he wants no part of this stuff. But I think that, like, we see the phases of Clark's guilt here, and I think that's what makes this a good episode.
Yes.
Or his grief, I should say, not his guilt. His guilt is a phase.
But... Well, I mean, it is kind of his fault for making Jarell turn back time, but...
Totally his fault. Totally his fault.
Yeah. Damn it, Barry.
So we get Martha. She apparently goes to Crime Alley to drop off these clothes. And we do see a sign in the background, Apex, which comes into play later on in the episode. I applaud it for dropping these visual hints about the plot to come.
I was wondering if this was like the Smallville production backlot at first until the camera pulled back, and then it clearly wasn't. It's a lot nicer than the one street we see in later seasons.
So, you know, Martha's going to drop off this box and these two guys come out of an alley and mug her and she rips the watch off of her wrist and she slaps the guy and fights back. But, you know, she's like, that was my husband's. But she does get beat up, though, pretty bad. And then they're going to slit her throat, which is pretty extreme, I think, to steal a box of giveaway clothes. But hey, it's the streets of Metropolis. It's a dangerous place. But then the Huntress shows up, doesn't she, Craig?
The Huntress, really now? Is that her name now?
I think I'll call her that because she's just, this is so Birds of Prey Huntress.
It is. Like, the way she would jump, like, yeah. Except for she could kind of fly in a weird way.
Yeah, she was like, well, you know, the Huntress could like use her cat powers, but here like leaping. At least there was no cat sound effects while this was going on. There was some, like, some whooshing and all that. Bizarre choices for the Birds of Prey. But really, it felt so much like the 2002 Birds of Prey TV show. And the leather trench coat flying around, things like that. Not to mention Batman music. Like, as we said, there is legit chords from the Danny Elfman Batman theme going on here.
Here's a question for you, since you and Matt are doing your Always Hold On to Birds of Prey side podcast thing. Here's a plug for you.
Thank you.
Do you think this would have worked if it had been Huntress from Birds of Prey?
You know, they would have, there's so much mythology with that, though, right? That's the problem. Like, I think absolutely it would have been really cool if this was like Ashley Scott's Huntress.
Yeah.
But they got to change so many things to make that fit, right?
Maybe, but I mean, we don't need to necessarily know who her father was.
Or her mother, right? I mean, even later on when she's talking about her mother got stabbed in an alley, I'm like, yeah. This is Birds of Prey! This is the Huntress, right? So I think they could have found a way to make it work. Like you can't use Batman, you can't use Wonder Woman, but you can use the Huntress.
Actually, I don't think they could have used the Huntress. I'm just saying it would have been nice.
Right.
Because, I mean, DC was a lot pickier with its characters back then, what they would allow. I mean, you would have thought we would have had a Smallville Birds of Prey crossover back in the day. But also, I mean, this is the world where, yes, they spin off Aquaman, and it's not the Aquaman from Smallville. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. You know, the other thing I was thinking when we were talking about spinoffs is between this and Green Arrow the next year, you've got to think they were, like, thinking of doing, like, a street-level spinoff of Smallville. Mm-hmm. But clearly it didn't
just
happen.
Pick one of these heroes and do a city crime show.
Yeah, I will say, though, we were talking about this before we were recording. Denise Quiñones looks a lot like Gal Gadot from the Wonder Woman movies. So I thought that was really kind of interesting. I was like watching, I was like, she would have been a good Wonder Woman.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And this is like a Wonder Woman, Batman, you know, amalgamation almost, this character. And Denise Quiñones, she was Miss Universe in 2001. So, yeah, I mean, she's a beautiful woman and doesn't do that much acting. I checked her IMDb. She usually does, Spanish films, Spanish language films, I've noticed. But, yeah, it's an impressive fight scene here. It's nice to see some, as you said, street-level crime, some martial arts action. But yeah, as you said, we're watching Birds of Prey right now and Always Hold On to Birds of Prey. That's all I could think about during this action scene. But then another very Gotham City like thing, a helicopter shows up,
right? With a spotlight.
With a spotlight.
And you know, the other thing I was thinking about when watching this scene, though, was the much more violent version from the pilot episode of Titans, where Robin is just like kicking the junk out of everybody.
F Batman.
Yeah, it's way too unnecessarily violent. Batman. Still, it gave me that vibe of that kind of scene. Mm-hmm. But I like it. We've got this character. She's, all those names that Chloe called her that I've already forgotten.
Well, I have a couple of them written down. We'll get into that. But yeah, we have a new superhero in town. But the most importantly, though, the watch has been stolen by Snake. As we learn his name is. And then we cut to opening credits and we come back and Lana has come to see Clark. And he's in a bad place. You know, I mean, she's wanted to talk to him, to spend some time with him, but he just wants to he really needs to get to the hardware store because it closes in 30 minutes. So.
And he can't super speed over there.
Right, he's like, Lana, can you leave so I can super speed out of here? But hey, Lana, like, she's reaching out to him. You know, I mean, they left things in a bad place in the last episode, obviously. But she was at his father's funeral. She's coming to reach out to him now, but he's got a lot going on, and you can see that. I think Welling does a great job in this episode playing these shades of grief.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode was I lost my dad when I was Clark's age at this time, when I was 19, so it meant a lot to me to see how the other characters reacted and helped him through, because I remember how the people in my life helped me through at the time. And, you know, I think it was probably good for me that it was 8 years after it happened, so it wasn't like a super fresh wound, so I could enjoy it as the drama it was. Now, I'm not saying that, I mean, the episode still gives me tears at a certain point, and we'll discuss that later. But still, it really resonated with me. I could identify with the story a lot because, I mean, one of the worst things that you can ever go through in your life is losing a parent. I mean, that's all Lana talked about for the first, like, 3 years of the show. But when you have people who care about you and a support system that cares, it means the world. And so I really appreciated that, I guess. And I think the other thing about this in general, and this sadly was one of the only episodes to really do this, is I really thought the show would give more emphasis on Martha at this point. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's like Jonathan taught Clark about right and wrong, but I thought Martha was going to teach him more about, like, heart and humanity. And clearly they ended up making it so it was like Lois or something like that. But I really thought that they were going to up Martha's role, and I'm so glad she had such a big part in this particular episode.
Well, and you know, and they handled it not like a after school special about how to handle a death of a family. Like, it was a well crafted story, and as you said, like seeing that the people around him reach out to him and how he reacted and how they, you know, reacted best they could. Like, it's not a good situation. There's no way around that. But to see how everyone had dealt with it, that was great. This is a coming of age show.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's a really important thing to have in a show. Like, obviously, not everyone's going to lose a parent at any age, but you can relate to this. Like, no matter who you are, there is a correlation in your life where you can relate to something like this, either yourself through a different family member or someone you know. So I like how they addressed this head on. It was like a true, you know, a rite of passage moment, if you will.
And this is a thing where, you know, it's almost always been a part of the Superman story where he can't save his father, no matter all of his powers. And then here it's also compounded with the notion that, you know, he rejected that watch of his father's and now it's gone and he missed that. And it's like, you know, that's another thing. You know, you can be Superman, but you might not be able to find a watch in some random pawn shop in Metropolis.
Right. Right.
It just showed how, like, even though he's Superman, he felt powerless. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he felt powerless to deal with, like, his mother's grief. And, you know, it's just a lot. Or, you know, he felt powerless in the fact that he might not be able to work the farm the way that his father did. You know? It's a really good story. It's a very human story. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why it's a highlight of the series for me.
Yeah, because Martha comes in and Clark sees that she's beat up and that tells him that they lost the watch and that she's real upset about. So he goes to the Daily Planet with Chloe. We have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections because she is a mole at the precinct. So, but they want to find out, you know, about this guy that mugged Martha. And, you know, as you said, Craig, he goes on to tell Chloe, he's like, I couldn't even look at my dad's clothes, and I said no to his watch. I should have just taken it like he would have wanted me to, and none of this would have happened. And yeah, that's the frustration. Like how you say, like, even a guy like Superman can feel powerless in these situations. And yeah, so they're on the case. They're going to look that up. But then they run into a bumbling reporter with glasses, right? This is a little too on the nose for me, what they did with this character, Craig.
But they want an excuse for her to wear contacts later.
Akiva to the rescue.
Yeah. But, you know, it was on the nose, but I don't know. Sometimes these, like, cheesy moments of the series I think are fun.
And I think again, they don't think they're going to get to the point where Clark is a bumbling reporter wearing glasses, changing in a phone booth at the Daily Planet. Like, they don't think they're going to get there, so it's a little more forgivable, right?
Or maybe they just don't expect it to happen, like, 115 episodes later.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
You know, and then forget to wear it at his own wedding, but whatever.
Well, he didn't know those people anyway, so it was fine.
Nice.
So we have Andrea, right? Andrea Rojas. She works there in the bay. We've never seen her before, you know. Never see in an episode. If like in today's CW, we would have seen her in like the last two scenes of the previous episode. If this was like yes. Arrow, right? They would have planted that seed.
I should point out, Andrea Rojas is a character on Supergirl this season.
Yes,
airing
yes.
Sundays on the CW. So if you want to see a new version of Andrea Rojas, who doesn't wear like a 1960s Jean Grey mask? There you go.
1960s Jean Grey, good. Yeah, I always thought of it like as a pirate mask, but yeah, you're right.
You know, you said pirate mask. The bit where they showed like her
belt. The belt! That's so Huntress!
Oh, to me, that made me feel it was very Zorro.
Yeah, no, which I is the Zorro mask. Yeah, Zorro. But yeah, again, you know, because Huntress had that belt in Birds of Prey. Which we saw again in Christ on Infinite Earths. And so just the focus on that as well made me think Huntress. But yeah, so we established Clark bumps into her and he has to help her pick everything up. But she sees the investigation that they're doing into the vigilante that saved Martha. Because Chloe's like, oh, this is the first confirmed eyewitness report. And she's been here for a few months. So they establish that she's kind of new. And we find out why later. But then she notices that they're looking into him, and then that's will come to play a little bit later. So then we cut to the Talon, and Lana's cleaning up, and you forget who runs and works the Talon at this point because they just kind of pass it along from character to character.
Yeah.
But Lex tells her, "I saw your car outside, huh? Old habits die hard." But she's cleaning up because Martha's dealing with a lot of stuff.
Wait a second.
Because Martha runs the Talon right now, apparently.
I have a question for you, though.
Yes.
Wouldn't Lana's car be there anyway? Doesn't she still live upstairs?
No, Lois lives upstairs now.
Where does Lana live?
Lana lives at Met You with Chloe.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's confusing. Every main character, almost every female main character has lived in that apartment. And even the Kents talked about it at the beginning of season 3 when they thought they had to sell the farm. So I think Tess is probably the only one who was never even discussed. That she would live up there. Again, it's confusing. Who lives there? Who runs the Talon? Who's working there? It's all very confusing. But Lex has come to apologize again for kissing her in the last episode. He's like, oh, it means more coming from someone who's not drunk. But he's really there to figure out where Clark and Lana stand in their relationship, isn't he, Craig?
Yes, because love triangles.
I mean, he's asking about Clark like as a friend. But he's really there to figure. He's like, "Oh, you and Clark sound like you were in a bad place last time we talked. How you guys doing?" It's like, God.
I think the thing is that I assume Elle and Miles were always going to go to that love triangle. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of inevitable to go there. And I mean, they were kind of hinting at it. Remember when we did Covenant, the podcast? Mm-hmm. Like, they were kind of starting to hint there that they could do a Lex and Lana thing.
Right.
And now that Lana's not in high school, it's like fair game.
So this is really the only element of that carrying over from Reckoning. Lex and her have her scene, and then Lex is off to more adult things later on in the episode, which are much better.
Yeah.
So we go back to the Daily Planet, and Chloe is no Cisco Ramon, let me tell you, because she is not coming up with good names for the Angel of Vengeance. She comes up with Miss Devilish, Dirty Harriet.
Yeah.
But then she eventually settles on the Angel of Vengeance, and that is a plus one for episode title set in episode for Vengeance. So, but why did they just call her Akrata?
Good question. I don't know the answer, but it's a good question.
I guess there's no way Chloe would have come up with that. Like, she comes up with Brainiac or Bizarro Clark. I mean, that's I can see how someone that thinks that way would come up with those names. No one's just going to come up with a Krata. But anyway, we get the Angel of Vengeance.
Cisco would.
Cisco. He'd find a way. But I'll take a screenshot of a couple of these things here. The headline that Chloe's laying out, as you pointed out, why would an intern who works in the basement be laying out the front page of the Daily Planet? And then also the police report they find out, because the police report comes in about the Angel of Vengeance. But why Chloe goes to retrieve it. Angel of Vengeance crashes in and threatens her, tells her to drop the story, and then she's like, comprende? And I'm like, if you're trying to cover up your identity, don't be going around talking all Spanish. You know what I'm saying?
Well, also in this scene, this is one of two moments in this episode where enough time has passed that I've forgotten about certain technologies. I'd forgotten about faxes. So when she goes and gets the fax, I'm like, oh yeah, that was a thing. But also the flip phones in the episode.
Yes, yes.
Were so 2006.
Well, it's like, you can laugh about old cell phones, but the fact that there are at least mobile phones, like, sets it like, okay, it's not too far gone.
Yeah, it's like, I was watching an episode of Dawson's Creek from the first season, mm-hmm. and Dawson was supposed to meet Jen someplace and couldn't find her, and it's like, dude, why don't you call her? And it's like, oh, wait. You know, it's like, they don't have phones then.
Smallville lived in that perfect time just as the internet and cell phones were becoming commonplace, so they had just enough in the show where it doesn't feel outdated, I guess.
Yeah, you can do a Google search for this, that, or the other thing. And But yeah, and also Clark got his inspiration for why, or in a way, like, oh yeah, well, you know, you work at the newspaper, you find out what's going on in town.
Yeah, they literally just spell it out for him. It's like, here's what you need to do.
Clark is a little slow, okay?
I believe this Clark needs it spelled out for him, though, so that's okay, I guess. But yeah. they have a little confrontation here, and I guess having a kryptonite-powered heart of some kind gives her super strength, because she just kicks Clark, punches him across the room.
What about that kryptonite, like, compact she has carrying?
Because she always keeps it with her, clearly in a lead... necklace, no doubt, a lead locket, because just it's similar to the way Lana kept it. It's very contrived just to have her have kryptonite. It's very contrived, because she had a heart transplant.
I guess whatever's in her heart doesn't affect him.
Right. Well, it's like that with everybody. You could say that about every meteor. Like, the only meteor freak that affected him was Jitters. You know, Tony Todd from Jitters, because he was, you know, had kryptonite in his skin.
And Lana, when she was full of kryptonite.
That's true. That's true. But all the other characters, like, kryptonite gives them their power, but it doesn't, like, stay in their system enough to affect Clark.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that's the only way you can make any sense of the show, you know? Or he'd be weak every time he confronted these people. And the whole point of giving them powers was to have him have a quote-unquote match to fight. So, but anyway, I don't know how this happened. She's really good at martial arts, and because she took gymnastics. I love how they throw in that she was in gymnastics.
Yeah. Yes.
It's kind of like how in Batman Returns, like, Selina Kyle goes home and listens to her answering machine, and there's some kind of, like, self-defense martial arts class. I don't remember exactly, but it's like, see, guys? That's how she can do all this stuff. I'm like, fine, it's fine.
It's but, better than not explaining it.
No, I appreciate the attempt. you know, after this aftermath here, Chloe's like, wow, did you see, like, that mask and cape and costume? And Clark's like, it's a little over the top, if you ask me. Which I like, because, again, Clark, much like Tom Welling, has no love for costumes. Clark and Chloe figure out that the Angel of Vengeance could be the only lead they have to finding Jonathan's watch. But they're like, how are we going to draw her out? You know, what are we going to do? And they're like, oh, I have an idea. And this is a really funny scene. I really enjoy this scene. It's Chloe's acting like, you know, she's being mugged by Clark, and he's wearing the ski mask, and he's like, come on, yell! Do once more with feeling! And she, you know, she's like, oh, help, I'm being robbed! And they've apparently going all around town doing this with no results. I found this a very amusing scene.
Well, also, he totally looked like the Black Hood from Riverdale.
Maybe so. I mean, I thought more like Cal from season 3 in Exile when he robs the bank. But, which is funny, he's wearing the ski mask, and then they go to meet up with these bad guys later, and I'm like, why don't you put that back on, man? Like,
yeah,
Clark is so dumb.
Kind of,
But this is really funny because, you know, Chloe's like, all right, Clark, we've gone all around town. I'm sick of doing this. And she's like, oh, help. And he's like, come on, actually yell. And so she's like, help. And then Angel of Vengeance comes down. And then we get our second instance of, like, straight up Batman music. Like, it is straight up. And then her and Clark have a little fight, but he's a little more prepared this time. Like, he blocks her kung fu, and again, very Huntress. She scrambles up the fire escape. It's almost, I wouldn't doubt if they, like, borrowed some CGI models left over from Birds of Prey for
this. Oh my gosh.
Come on, you totally got that same vibe, right?
Oh, I did. Mm-hmm. But I, unlike Birds of Prey, it seemed like they actually spent time on actual rooftops. Whereas Birds, it seemed like they were all CG. Mm-hmm. But, and that's where Clark and Andrea end up. Mm-hmm. And then they
He's grabbed her mask, by the way. So they know that it's Andrea from the Daily Planet. Then we go to Lionel and Lex's office, and I was very unclear. Like, much when, like, Lex and Lionel, like, shift who's in charge of Luther Corp several times throughout the show, it's kind of confusing, frankly. But as I understand it, he had some connections in the Asian markets, this Apex group, and they've been using it, he's been using them to have a hostile takeover of Luther Corp, because Lex squandered and a lot of the Luther Corp, you know, assets for his campaign, and so that made him vulnerable to a takeover, which makes sense. And they sent him a gun from General MacArthur, and Lionel's like, I have returned. It's very cool. Also, like, I have returned as a villain. I guess that's kind of what they're going for there. But I don't know. How did Lionel, I guess it's just people he knew from back in the day, because, like, shouldn't he have, like, no resources? Like, nothing has changed since Lex took over Luther Corp, right?
Yeah, but Lionel wants power again, and Lex's campaign costs them a bit, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Lionel also, you know, he was funding the camps. I just don't know how he got all his wealth back from where we left him, right? He got out of jail in season four. He had nothing. And then he just decided to be evil again in Onyx, right? Or a more complicated evil, I guess. And then he gets, you know, zapped by the Kryptonian crystal in the season finale. And now he's like an Oracle of Jor-El. So he's bad, but he's good. And he's a complicated character still. But I don't know where he gets all these resources. It was easier before, like, oh, he's Lionel Luthor. He's in charge of Luther Corp. But now he just has millions of dollars. Who knows, billions of dollars laying around.
He probably had some money hidden somewhere.
Some offshore accounts.
Exactly. You know, I don't know.
But I had forgotten so much of that was in this episode, like these Luther power plays. So
I always love, and it, I mean, now, you know, probably since the last time we talked, you've now met John Glover. Mm-hmm. And you know how not Lionel he is.
It is a 180. It's incredible. Like,
he,
like,
is such a kind man.
Everybody knows that he's a great actor, but when you know how he really is and then see what he's even here, he's like twice as great, right?
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, he's so cold and calculating.
Like, does this come from?
I think in Ed O'Toole even explained that, like, Lionel's like a snake. You know what I mean? It's like he's just so dastardly. And, you know, him and Michael, I mean, I think they were both kind of blessed to have such great screen partners.
Yeah, because, you know, they're each trying to one-up each other. Like, you rise to the level of their opponent, and they do that in every scene.
I mean, I probably should save this for later in the episode, but when it's been so long since I've watched, there's certain details that I've forgotten over time. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of surprised, like, later in the episode where, you know, Clark is using his powers in front of Lionel, and I'm like, wait a second.
Is he really using his powers in front of Lionel? Like, I gotcha, but, like, he super speeds to the window. It's really all.
Yeah, but still, I mean, I don't know. I just didn't remember Lionel knowing what was up at that time. But anyway, go on.
So after the very sinister I have returned, and, you know, and I thought, you know, there was speculation back on the Krypton site forums back in the day. Because I was big in there between season 3 and 5. People were like, oh, that gun. I bet Lex kills Lionel with that gun, right? That's going to come back and have some prominence. Zero prominence. Never comes up again. So much for fan speculation. It is. Okay, yeah, that's a cool thing. But we cut from here to Andrea and Clark on the roof. And she calls him a meathead. It's just funny. And it's like, oh, show and tell, you go first about, like, who you are, your powers, etc. So Clark explains that he was born this way, like Lady Gaga. And
I'm glad I wasn't the only one whose mind went there.
And Andrea, by the way, her name being Andrea, and I know this is based off a real character, made me think of Batman Mask of the Phantasm, right? Because that is Bruce Wayne's, spoilers for that movie, right? That's his ex-love who becomes a vigilante. They have that conversation, and he's like, what will vengeance solve? She got a heart transplant about 6 months ago from a girl who died in the meteor shower, the second meteor shower. So, and ever since then, she, you know, she's had these powers, these very ill-defined powers. Like, I never really, I wanted to be like, so what exactly can you do? You know?
I take it the Vengeance Chronicles doesn't explain any of that.
I barely remember those, and I seriously doubt it as well.
Okay.
But she does tell Clark, you have no idea what it's like to know someone's life has been traded for yours. Hence the heart transplant. It's like, so on the nose, so topical show.
And anyway. Jonathan Kent's heart literally gave out.
Exactly. But then she says, that's why I carry this with me. She pulls out a little amulet with kryptonite in it. Obviously has to be lead, or Clark would have felt it before now.
I'm allergic.
He literally says, I thought we got past that allergic talk in like seasons two or three, but here we are still saying allergic. She's like, to a rock? Whatever. Like, it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But she mentions how her and her mom were attacked when they were coming back from a gymnastics meet. And her mom was in charge of Akrata, which is, of course, the name of this character from the comic book. So she's trying to tie all that stuff together. But that's what she's after, you know, justice and, well, really vengeance. Right? This episode, this is not justice. That's next season. This season is vengeance.
So. Yeah.
But she you know, it tells them the story, and she's like, oh, we're the same. We want the same thing. I'll tell you where this guy is, right? Because he wants her to help him find the watch. And she's like, all right, that's, come on, we got real problems.
You know, again, you'd think getting all this backstory that, oh, the CW is planning a spinoff for this character.
Right.
But.
Supergirl, Flash, Aquaman, Angel of Vengeance, Green Arrow. I mean, so many possibilities, Greg.
Justice League.
So Clark decides to go help her. They're going to go where these guys are, you know, take them out, get some quote unquote justice for Andrea, and get Jonathan's watch back. That's the plan.
Or get some vengeance.
Get some, perhaps, vengeance as well. So the next scene is at the Daily Planet. Martha and Chloe, a rare scene between these two characters. Martha does not get enough scenes with the girls on this show, in my opinion.
But also, this is another one of those examples, you know, when I was talking earlier about, like, I thought they were going to do more with Martha in the series at this point. And I also love, this is something Alan Miles did really well, especially in season 5. With like balancing the females of the show, at least between like Lana and Chloe, because it's like, yeah, Chloe can be Clark's girlfriend, but Chloe is kind of like the honorary member of the family. Mm-hmm. Like, she's the confidant. And Martha even says something about like, I'm glad we have you to share the secret with. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really sweet. And it was a really good scene between Annette and Allison.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's a real human moment. Cause she's like, Martha's like, when Jonathan died, I didn't know if I could go on, you know, with this secret, not being able to share it with someone. And she's like, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you know. And they, you know, they hug, and it's a nice moment. And yeah, you're right. Just like Annette O'Toole was just underused. Like, you think in theory, you're like, oh, well, we're going to get so much more Martha. And then she's on for a season and a half and then gone after this. So,
well, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, going through a loss like this when I was 19. Mm-hmm. I know that I probably spent more time with my mother after that point, just because, you know, you appreciate what you have when somebody's gone. And sadly, the show didn't really follow that.
Well, part of their conversation here is Clark is missing. They can't find him. They've checked everywhere, called him. And where he is he's with Andrea down at where these thugs hang out. And again, Clark should be wearing his ski mask. She's back to wearing her pirate mask or Zorro mask or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whatever, Clark, he walks around Metropolis without a mask, without glasses, but no one recognizes him in the future, in theory. But anyway, they come up with these guys. They're looking for Snake. And that's the guy with the bald guy, the Lex-looking fellow with the tattoo. And then the guy that was with him. They find the guy that was with him. And they're like, hey, we're looking for Snake, blah, blah, blah. And they Clark notices that they have guns, so he kind of defuses the situation, and they leave, and they walk off. But he's like, tell him we're looking for him. And the guy tells Snake that they're looking for him. He pulls out his phone, his flip phone, as you pointed out, and calls him and tells him about it. But Clark uses a super hearing, and they've really cut the budget at this point on the super hearing. We don't see a zoom in to lips. We don't see an eardrum. We don't see sound waves. We just get a close-up. Yeah, which is fine.
They blew their whole budget for the episode flying the Angel Vengeance to the roof.
That is just leftover Birds of Prey special effects.
Fair.
But it is funny that of all the superpowers, like, they're all very consistent throughout the show. X-ray, heat vision, you know, speed. But super hearing is the one they just change all the time. Like, they just couldn't really... I know it's a weird one to show, but they just could never really figure out how to capture it. And that's fine, but I like pointing out when it's different. Clark overhears him talk to Snake with a super hearing. Super speeds in, grabs the phone, and then they go back to the Daily Planet. And this is where Andrea changes in the phone booth. And like, you always change in a phone booth? And she's like, oh, the janitor was in the bathroom. It's like, ha ha ha, so funny. Of course, we see Clark change in that very phone booth later on in this show.
Well, I just realized, though, like, wouldn't you find it weird if one of your coworkers was getting dressed in the phone booth?
Yeah, because it's not opaque. It's kind of a clear glass.
Yeah. But I also, was this the scene where, like, Chloe makes a comment like, oh, I thought you gave me up for your new friend. It was like she was kind of like hinting that Clark might have a thing for Andrea. Mm.
Yeah, like the promotional poster. Like the promotional poster that says, like, she's hard to handle and impossible to resist. I'm like, what this is not Poison Ivy. This is not Maxima. Right? This is just another here. Like, that's one of the most misleading posters they've ever had.
But honestly, I disagree with you a little bit because the thing that's impossible to resist is the desire for vengeance.
Oh, look at that. Look, peeling back the layers, Craig. All right.
And remember, there's the bit where, you know, you're about to get to it. I'm ruining it for you. But, you know, he's about to kill a guy. Right. And she's kind of encouraging him to do it. And that's that lust for vengeance.
Mm. You could say vengeance is the theme of the episode, really.
Exactly. So that's what he's trying to resist.
Okay. All right. I buy it. You've turned me around on that poster.
Woohoo!
But this scene is just like one thing after another. We got the phone booth. And then Andrea... she's putting on some glasses, and she's like, yeah, without them, I'm blind as a bat. I'm like, you get it? She's like Batman. And then she pulls out a box. This is, if Hero did not exist, if this Spirit Gum episode did not exist, this would be the most egregious case of product placement. Wait, plus one for product placement, Pete.
But
pulls
Zach,
out a box, yes.
Within the last 6 months, you did an episode for, was it Splinter or Solitude, where Lois had to show off her car?
Oh. All right. You might be right.
And she spent like 5 minutes talking about all the features.
Okay. Yeah, okay, but fair enough. Fair enough.
Or Old Spice and Jinx.
Old Spice. Yeah, okay. It's you're right. It's pretty bad when it happens on the show. That's why we have a marker for it. But just the fact that Acuvue to the rescue is said,
yes.
And it became such a catchphrase because it's like Johnson & Johnson, Acuvue, and they had a whole like promotional campaign for it.
Yeah.
There were posters. There were commercials. There was like some contest, right? And they had the whole tie-in for the Vengeance Chronicles. Like there was a lot to it, right?
Yeah.
And I've never used contact lenses. Have you?
Nope.
Okay, I just don't want to put stuff in my eye. I have slight stigmatism in my eyes, so like basically if I squint, I can see 20/20, but most of the time I have fine vision. I can drive without my glasses. The main reason I wanted to get the glasses was because of season 3 of Smallville when Clark got it. I was like, oh, I think it's time I get some glasses. So it plays into my own Superman persona, I guess. But Acuvue to the rescue. I think if there's one thing this episode is known for, it's that, right, Craig?
Yes. I mean, like I tweeted, this morning I tweeted, I was like, I'm going to be on Always Smallville, hashtag Acuvue to the rescue.
That would, see, if Smallville were today, that would have been a trending hashtag Acuvue to the rescue. So anyway, she wears contact lenses when she's a superhero and doesn't when, and wears glasses when she's not. And, you know, I guess that, I mean, yeah, if you're a hero who wears glasses, you can't just be blind out there. So that makes sense. So Acuvue really is coming to the rescue whenever the Angel of Vengeance is prowling the streets. But then she goes to her desk and is like typing stuff. And they're like, oh, that's why you work here. Because anything that happens in Metropolis is going to come through the Daily Planet. And I would criticize the show more, but at least the character is condescending. She's like, way to put the pieces together. So,
although, does the Daily Planet just hire everybody that wants to work there, whether or not they have a journalism degree? Because I thought she was a gymnast.
They hired Clark, and he's a college dropout, Craig. So you tell me.
But Perry White. No, that's, Perry didn't come into play until later.
I love how the show ran long enough to finally bring back these characters that we thought would just be pushed aside, like Perry White, Sam Lane, Lucy Lane.
The Angel of Vengeance. Oh, wait.
Exactly. So many opportunities. The Angels of Vengeance for Smallville really is the Huntress, but not from Birds of Prey. Huntress from Arrow, who they could never bring back after season two for some reason. So
They tried. Her schedule just never worked out. So
I read an article about that, too. It was basically like she was the one that they really wanted hard to get her back, even in the finale, they just couldn't do it. So
why wasn't the Angel of Vengeance in Crisis? That's the real loss we had here. Forget no Rosenbaum. Forget no Linda Carter. Where was the Angel of Vengeance?
That's a cool name. Agent of Vengeance. I wonder if that's taken.
That's actually a better name. But
that's good. Let's get on that.
Chloe called her that because she came down like an angel. A warrior angel.
That's the other thing. You already have a character called Warrior Angel in your continuity.
Why not call her the Warrior Angel?
Exactly. She's like some kind of real life warrior angel. A vengeance. There you go. We did it for our show.
You know, it's kind of like when Black Lightning's like, Superman's real. You know, like,
that was
there
cool.
can be a real warrior angel.
That was cool. So, Clark, being the investigator partner, he uses, and I'll take a screenshot, as I love doing these, of Snake's cell phone.
And there were one or two names that I recognized from the crew.
Megan
Foster's one of them.
So Easter egg. And it is fun to see that, you know, the production designers or whoever puts that stuff together always giving out Easter egg shout outs to the fellow behind the scenes people. So we'll take a note of that. But they find that he orders from a pizza place a lot. So he calls the pizza place and he orders a pizza. And Clark's just lucky because they're like, I guess they say, is your address still 123-221B Baker Street or whatever? And he's like, yes, it is. So that's how they find out where he is. But when Clark goes for super speeds over there, they're still in like this alley. You know? So I don't know. Supposedly he went to his house, but I guess he pulled him outside to beat him up. But Andrea's like, she tells Chloe, don't worry, I'll look after him. So sinister.
Yeah, look after him so he wants to kill the person.
Yeah. So and he has all his anger and doesn't know what to do with it. So he's taking it out on this guy. As if he's the one who killed his father. He even says, like, how is trash like you still alive and my dad's dead, you know? And
which is another way to give up his identity.
Yeah, exactly. Clark, get it together. And this is a really good lesson, as you were saying, a really good scene for Clark. Because he's taking out his anger on this guy. He's like, the watch was my dad's. And he apparently Snake had sold it already. So it's lost as far as Clark knows. That's really what sets him over the edge. Picks him up, you know, Darth Vader style, one arm, and is choking him. And then, speaking of Star Wars, Angel of Vengeance shows up and goes full Emperor on Clark. He's like, yes, give in to your anger. Yes. Right? Good, good. And if these people would just shut up and stop egging them on, like Luke Skywalker or Clark Kent might actually kill the person they want him to, right?
You know, that might be a good reason why it wasn't Batman, because Batman wouldn't have told him to kill somebody.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. Batman is a stretch. I think we all understand they couldn't do Batman. That would have been... There's a lot to that. But I think we're onto something with the Huntress, because the Huntress is a lot more gray area character, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she was half Catwoman, half Batman in that version. Right. In Birds of Prey, she just kills everybody, which is kind of awesome. I like the Birds of Prey Huntress, but that's... You know, the movie Huntress.
I wish she was in it more. She was definitely my favorite non-Harley Quinn character. Mary Elizabeth Winstead. It's crazy. We have three live-action Huntresses now.
Four. They did a TV special, like Superhero.
Oh, Legend of the Superheroes from the 70s? Oh, my. Yep. Is she in that?
There was a Huntress in that as well, and she had her classic, like,
the purple
and blue costume. Yes.
Amazing. I mean, I watched that when I got DC Universe because I'm like, oh, is this on here? And it's as bad as you think, people. Don't watch it. But hey, if you want to see Adam West, Burt Ward, and Frank Gorshin reprise their roles from Batman 66, check it out.
Do you know what I'm surprised is not on DC Universe is the 1997 Justice League pilot.
Yeah, that fits right next to those. So I don't know why. Maybe it's a rights thing. Who knows? Because I think it was on CBS, maybe, and...
It was going to be on CBS. It actually aired overseas, and that's where all the bootlegs
came. I was wondering where those came from. Okay, that's where they came from.
It aired in, like, Canada once, and...
That is just horrible. That is just terrible.
It shows how far TV has come. You know, we have the CW shows now, but the CW shows now wouldn't have existed without a grounded show like Smallville for 10 years. I mean, right. Mostly grounded, but you know what I mean.
Well, as we all know, Craig, Arrow launched the superhero golden age of television we experience today, right?
No, because Arrow wouldn't have happened if audiences weren't familiar with Green Arrow already.
And it ran for a record 8 seasons, which is longer than any superhero show. Like, I just love these ill-informed okay. articles.
Well, that's Deadline for you, but it was on the CW longer than Smallville was.
Hmm. Oh, haha, I see what you did there. Well said. Well played, sir.
Smallville was on for 6 seasons on the CW? So, I mean, the Flash is passing it soon.
I guess it's just 4, really, because it was after, yeah, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, so it was 5. I think it was a solid split right down the middle.
Oh, yeah, you're right. For some reason, I was thinking it started with 5, but yeah, you're right.
And they had those ridiculous promotions, like, they're just dancing around on the CW. Oh, those GIFs still exist online, they're so funny. Yeah, just lime green, it's the worst. But speaking of green... Look at that segue back into the episode. Uh-oh. Andrea pulls out some kryptonite to use against Clark because he decides he's not going to kill him because it's not what he's
about. So she's just
going to
do it herself.
So she'll do it. She's like, I'll do it myself. And then she pulls out the kryptonite. Of course, it's been established that Clark is weakened by it. So she uses it against him. Clark's trying to talk her out of it, you know, and she's like, who killed my mom? And he's like, oh, it wasn't a mugging. It was a hit. It was from Lionel Luthor. Of course, it's from Lionel Luthor, right? And then you think maybe she's not going to kill him because he gave her the information she wanted, but she kills him anyway. Cold blood right in front of Clark.
Can we also discuss the notion that as soon as that kryptonite thing was like closed, Clark sped off pretty fast. Like, how does he recover that quickly now?
If he could just like pick it up and throw it away from him, like a few feet, he might be okay. Because they never really establish how close or far he needs to get from something like that.
Right.
But yeah, that's inconsistent. But you just kind of roll with it for Superman. But yeah, you're absolutely right. He's at full strength again. And then we come back to Luther Corp, and again, there's like Lionel is moving into the office, and like, it's like the board's meeting is not till tomorrow. And I had forgotten that this was part of this episode. I really like the line. I wrote it down. How Lionel said to Lex, because Lex had been scrambling to stop Lionel from doing this. He's like, "How does it feel to pull all those strings and find out they're attached to nothing?" So. There's this pass card, and it's like it represents like the control of Luther Corp, who has the pass card to the office, right? So they go in the office, and they're still talking. And this was great because I had forgotten this entirely. Lex uses the fact that he knows Lionel met with Jonathan right before his death against him because he's like, "What do you think Martha Kent would think about this secret meeting you had with her husband?"
Like, and then Lionel's like, "Why did you say that name?"
What? Clark v. Andrea, Dawn of Justice here. It's so good because the Lionel Martha thing really is one of my favorite just things of Smallville.
Yes. And,
I had forgotten that, and I was like, well done, Lex. I don't know how I would have known that. I mean, they're always monitoring each other, tapping each other's phones. Who knows, right? But I believe that Lex could have found that out.
But it just was like you saw Lionel's demeanor just change, like, no, he can't take that away from me.
Yeah, he is in complete control. He's about to take his company back, right? And then he's like, "What do you want, Lex?" And Lex takes the card back, and he's like, "I hope you enjoyed your stay." Like, it's at a hotel. Like, it's so good. So good. And he's like, "Sorry it was so short." And he leaves. And Lionel just stands there pondering everything for a while. Luckily for the Angel of Vengeance, she thinks that Lionel Luthor is still in charge of Luther Corp. And immediately
jumps in the exact correct window.
How did she... explain to me the physics of... like, that's like the highest building in Metropolis, right?
She jumped from the roof of the Daily Planet.
Of course.
I mean, it happened in season 2, Insurgents. Why not again? That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
Very good. I also thought about... So Clark, he's still laying there in that alley dying, and the other guy, Snake's, you know, second in command or whatever, comes and finds him. He's like, "Snake? Snake?" And I thought about... because he said it twice and he's dead. I thought about Metal Gear Solid 2, and it's my favorite sound effect in any video game. Because if you're Solid Snake, and when you die, the guy on the radio goes, "Snake? Snake? Snake?"
"Snake, what's wrong? Snake? Snake?" "Stop kidding around. Snake? Snake, respond! Snake? Snake!"
And that's what I thought of. But anyway, moving on from that, he picks up Clark. He's like, oh, you're going to get it now. You're going to be dead. But because he picks up Clark and moves him, I don't know, 5 feet away from the necklace, his powers are restored.
And then he's like, bam. He's like, pshoo.
And he shows up just in time to, I guess, again, Clark somehow knows that Lionel is going to be in his office. Lots of leaps of logic here. There's no reason for any of these people to think Lionel Luther is going to be in that office, but I understand that's the set we have. Because notice we only see that one office, right? We never see Lionel and Lex's office.
Well, it's like Lex has this huge mansion and you only see one room for most of the time. But, you know, I was just thinking, though, like, doesn't Clark need a pass card to get into Luther Corp?
He's been up there before many times.
Okay, fine.
Like, but Insurgents, still. Exile.
But he didn't jump this time.
Look, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So
okay.
So, Angel of Vengeance, she's got Lionel. She's holding him out the window she had just crashed through. Man, they need to get some better glass up there at Luther Corp, by the way. But she basically tells Clark, like, what if you were facing the person that killed your father, right? Because that's their...
And that's so dead on.
I know. It's like, okay, we get it, show. Like, enough. But that's the connection they have, because she lost her mom, he lost his dad. They feel like they're kindred spirits, but they're really not. And that's kind of like a classic Batman, Catwoman, Batman, Phantasm thing going on here. This being Clark being the Batman here, ironically, if you reverse the roles. And then I was thinking this also, ironically, this is how Lionel dies, just a couple years later.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, like the part where they're looking down. I'm like... Yeah, get used to that view, Lionel.
But Clark's trying to talk her out of it. Lionel's like, listen to him. But she says, I know you, Clark. I killed a man. You'll never be able to let me go. I'm like, you know, you've known him for like a day.
I know.
It's like, you don't know. Maybe he'll be cool about it. You don't know Clark like we do. So, I don't know. She's jumping to his conclusions. But what she does, she's like, you have to be the real hero now. So she throws Lionel out the window and then, you know, jumps away.
Because it's been so long since I've seen the episode, I didn't remember how things panned out. But I was like, is Clark going to speed to the ground and catch him?
But right.
No, he speeds up, grabs him before he falls.
Which is, see, that's explainable enough, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you could, like, if Lionel didn't know, of course he does. And but if he didn't know, you could still kind of get around that. But he saves Lionel. And I like Lionel's very astute here. He's like, why do I get the feeling you saved me more for her sake than mine?
But, you know, I was also getting a vibe watching this episode, and they didn't really pick up on this a whole lot, that Lionel might eventually become like a mentor to Clark.
Yeah, because he's like son. He calls him son. They have that shot of him looking out the window together. I mean, they did kind of go that way, I guess, season...
With like Veritas and stuff.
Yeah, like one of the most weird moments to me in the show... It's like season 7 when, you know, John Glover had been doing some shows on Broadway, so Lana had him kidnapped with a bear trap for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And then he comes back, and, like, he's in his office, and Clark gives him a hug. I was like, that's weird. Yeah. But that shows you how far they've come in that amount of time.
But also, this leads right into Lionel going to see Martha, and it's like he's already kind of ingratiated himself upon Clark, and now he's going into Clark's mother, and... It's just very interesting how he's, like, putting himself in their lives.
And it works, too. Like, I guess it shouldn't work, but I don't know. It's, like, either the writing or the acting or just Lionel's such an interesting character. We want to see him in these new situations.
And then, you know, they'll all spend Thanksgiving together the next
fall. Exactly. It all worked out just fine. But, yeah, as you said, Martha's in the barn, and, you know, it's a touching moment. Martha has a lot like this in this episode.
Also, I guess she didn't give away Jonathan's jacket.
Well, she gave away, all of his clothes didn't fit in that one box, you know.
Okay.
But she finds one of his jackets hanging in the barn, and she smells it because she's like, it still smells aftershave. And yeah, that's a big thing. You know, if you've had family members, loved ones who've died, passed away, left, like, you know, just having those objects around or even like the smell of them on them, like that's a powerful thing. And
it smells like a Duke's car.
Yeah. So I'm glad they took that moment there. And then another really good reveal, much like Martha was revealed earlier in the episode. Jenna Swart does a great job with the camera here. We see Lionel kind of out of focus over her shoulder, and he looks really ominous.
Well, and it's like, who is it? Is it Jonathan? Is it Clark?
Well, you know, I thought this very thing, like, is it Jonathan? You know, in season 9, when Perry White comes in, and he's wearing, I guess, this very jacket, and they all, like, look, and, like, he looks like Jonathan because he's coming in through the sun for a minute, but he's not, it's just Perry White. You know, I that's what I thought of as well. in this moment too. But no, it is Lionel. You know, it's interesting because he like reaches out to her as like a fellow, you know, widower to a widow. He's like, oh, and my wife, when Lillian died, and it's like trying to find some common ground. And funny for like, and hey, all credit to Martha, right? Because like 90% of this conversation, she's not having it. Like her face is very like, I'm not buying this stuff.
That was also Annette O'Toole, which she brings up in at least one of my books, that like, you know, like Glover, when you do interviews, I'm like, oh yes, I loved him and Martha. And Lionel, and Annette's like, yeah, no.
Well, it's better than the, well, this whole plot line here, like he's come to check on her about the being the center, and she's like, how would you know that? I didn't even tell Clark that. He's like, well, it's my business to know, and I'm worried about you, and I'm always here for you. And like this plot line with I don't think either of the Kents should be a senator, all right? But yeah, this let's just be clear about that. But this is better than her being pregnant in season two, in my opinion. Right?
Yeah. I don't know what that story was supposed to be. No offense, Alan Miles, if you're listening.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have a million other things to put together. They're listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
But Martha here at the end, she does kind of like, you see that she kind of cracks a little bit and she's vulnerable because he's like, you know, politics and money got between me and Jonathan. I don't want the same thing to happen to us. So he basically refunds the money that Jonathan had paid him for that he had sold the back 40 for. So I assume they got the back 40 back, right?
Yeah, but you know, the ownership of that farm, I mean, they can sell the farm two episodes before the end and have it back just in time for a crisis.
There you go. But Bruce Wayne bought the bank. That's what happened. So this sets up the new dynamic between Lionel and Martha for the rest of the season and the rest of their time together on the show, which they even bring back all the way in season 10 when it's alternate universe Lionel. So again, that carries on all the way to the end. I really like that. But we go back to the Daily Planet, and Angel of Vengeance's desk, Andrea's desk, has been cleared out. Numbers have been disconnected. It's like she never existed. So Chloe's tried to find her. She can't.
Until the Vengeance Chronicles, where clearly somebody finds her. I could be remembering things wrong, but wasn't Andrea in the Justice and Doom tie-in thing?
Oh, in season 7 in the comic book, or season 6 in the comic book? Oh, you might be right. I don't know. I haven't seen those in so long. So those are going to be fun to revisit. Now that's just a comic though. So they eventually it's interesting that they have these live action like Chloe Chronicles or whatever for a while, and then they went to straight up comic books.
Well, all of those projects are spearheaded by Mark Warshaw, who wrote Skinwalker and Jinx, and he also was in charge of the Smallville Ledger and Torch websites that I wrote for. So, you know, like I remember him having a whole mythology for Justice and Doom, but I don't remember any details, but I think Andrea might have been there.
Well, I'm glad they did something with that, because you know, season 6, you set up the Justice League and they leave, and then like they're nowhere to be seen the rest of the season, and they're like, oh well, here's what they were doing. That's not the purpose of those comics. But yeah, they as far as the live action proper Smallville episodes that don't tie into anything in a commercial way, we never see Andrea or the Angel of Vengeance again. Chloe's like, oh, that's too bad. Metropolis could really use someone like her.
And Clark doesn't get it.
Yeah, you know, a mild-mannered reporter by day and a crime fighter by night. Do you think you could do that, Clark? And he's like, yeah, I kind of want to try to find a way to not hide who I really am.
Yeah, I'm just going to lose my powers.
Just going to give up my powers and work on the farm. Again, people, it tracks. It tracks.
It tracks.
So then we have Clark back at the farm. And, okay, this got me again. I remember back when I saw it for the first time, I was like, oh, it's like Daredevil. She found the bracelet. It's Braille. You know, when Clark goes back to the farm and he finds his dad's watch, right? I'm like, that's so cool. But no, Lana found it at a pawn shop. You know, I just, like, that got me when I saw it the really first sweet. Time. And I, no, it is, no, that was sweet. But I'm just thinking, like, in the Catwoman, Elektra, Batman, Daredevil tradition, right, the hero would go back to his wherever he is, find something left for him by the astray female anti-hero, like Batman Mask of the Phantasm. He finds the locket from Andrea in the Batcave at the end of the movie. So I don't know, like, that's where my mind was when I saw it back in 06, and I'd forgotten because it's been a while since I've seen it, and I thought, oh, that's cool, they did it. No, Lana found it. But you're right, it is sweet that Lana went to every pawn shop, because in that conversation earlier when Lana went to go talk to Clark, he had mentioned, well, obviously she had seen Martha come in, and they talked about how the watch was gone, so she took it upon herself to go through all the pawn shops in Metropolis and find it. I guess she somehow knew what the watch looked like, or...
But she also, it also shows how much she cared about Clark at this point in the series, and I thought that was really nice. Like, sometimes, you know, the actions of a character can reveal a lot about them, so...
Very true. Like that. So all of my preconceptions about other Batman stories aside, and what the... I don't know, I guess I thought the Angel of Vengeance was, like, the main attraction of this episode, so to speak, so that would have been a nice final moment, because right now, as it stood, right... She pushed Lionel out of the window and ran off. And there was no, like, coda to that, other than talking about her. But yes, you're right. A very thoughtful, loving thing for Lana to do. So give her credit where credit is due, right?
Exactly.
But we're going to keep an eye on this watch in future episodes, Craig, because I don't know if it's the same watch.
So, well, is he wearing the same watch in Crisis?
See, everybody thought so, because I saw, like, screenshots of, like, here's Jonathan Kent from season 3 of Smallville, and here's Clark from... Christ on Infinite Earth, and it looks like the same watch that looked like it, but that's not this watch. So I don't, it's hard to say.
Here's the other thing though, like, Tom might have insisted on wearing the watch for the reason that, you know, he said about, you know, wanting to channel Jonathan Kent in a way.
Right.
You know, like, maybe he I don't know. Like, maybe that was his way of showing tribute. It does seem like Tom was really fond of John Schneider too.
Yeah. Like a true father figure to him on the show.
Yeah. That kind of gets to the next scene that we've got coming up. Even 15 years or however many years later, still got me teary-eyed.
Yeah, man. This is an A-plus scene, right? Because yeah. Clark comes in to the house, and Martha's watching some old home movies of Jonathan riding a tractor with Clark. And it's a great way to incorporate Jonathan and John Schneider into the episode. Because, you know, he's still under contract. He's still in the main credits, so they can use him in, you know, 2 or 3 more episodes.
As far as I understand it, I could be telling a story wrong, because, again, it's been a lot of years. I think Schneider insisted that he was contracted for 13 episodes, so he would have to be in 13 episodes, which is why they wrote him into that episode later in the season.
Oh, interesting.
And you get, like, a flashback here and there.
Well, see, I thought it was very organic, though. That's interesting if that's the case, because I didn't think it stuck out. They did a good job of, like, hey, we're going to see our dead parents. Hey, Brainiac's going to impersonate your dad. Stuff like that.
No, they never took him out of the opening credits that year. Right. Although the old TV show Cagney and Lacey had a cast member who died in, like, season 3, and he was kept in the opening credits for the rest of the series as a tribute.
Oh, impressive. I mean, like, on Star Trek, you know, Tasha Yar died in season 1 of TNG. She's in... the opening credits for the last 3 episodes. It's like too much work to change the credits. So it's just better just to leave.
Well, I remember Smallville didn't change it between seasons 2 and 3.
Yes, such laziness. Such laziness.
That made me sad.
But speaking of sad, yes, this is an extremely powerful scene, because I think we've all been there. You know, like I've said on the podcast before, like my Jonathan Kent in my life was my grandpa, and he passed away a few years ago. So like I can definitely relate to, like, you're sitting there, you're watching home movies, like you're it makes you cry, you know? I mean, like, because you are sad. Like, no matter how much time passes, you know, that loss is always still there. And it's okay to cry. You know, I think that's a powerful message of this episode that kind of goes unsaid. You know, like, Superman is crying with his mom because his dad passed away, you know? And that's okay.
It's okay to grieve. Yeah. Right. One thing that I was thinking about when I was watching this episode, I regret when I was doing the books that I never asked Annette specifically, if it's weird to play a character mourning somebody that you know is still alive in real life. Hmm. Like, she could just call John Schneider on the phone, you know what I mean?
Right. And they're watching new footage of him on the TV, right?
Yeah, it's like, but yeah, that scene, and just the fact that he, like, I think he waved and said goodbye, and it's like, ugh.
Right?
You guys are, like, twisting. It's like in Crisis when 1990 Barry Allen is going to do his thing, and you see the flashback to the old series, and it's like, oh, damn it, you went there.
That was a
great
moment, yeah. No, and it didn't feel out of place either, because he's like, hey, wave goodbye to your mom on the camera, like, this back 40, it's going to be our sons one day. Like, it all felt so
But and genuine. Then when the camera pulled away, you see them mourning, and you still see Jonathan on the TV screen. It's like,
Like, so well done. Like, A-plus scene.
And it also just showed that, you know, Jonathan still lived on in that house, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, his lessons, what he offered to the family, were going to live forever. But even though physically he wasn't there anymore, but I think it was also a tribute to John Schneider, the actor, and what he added to the show for so many years, that we as an audience could feel for it as well. It's like, wow, nothing's going to be the same.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and a line from earlier in the episode that I did want to mention was when Martha and Chloe were talking, and Martha's like, Jonathan, he always knew what to say, and he grounded Clark, and Chloe said, well, I don't think he was the only one. So I liked how they established that as well, because even Martha in universe is like, Jonathan's the one for Clark. But to see the whole family unit, and you're right, just the fact that his presence, his influence on Clark would live forever was a very powerful way to end it. And yeah, it even all these years later, you know, it's an emotional scene. And the more life you live, the more emotions you can, you know, connect with things. And definitely, like, it's a lot more emotional for me now because I think about my own experiences. And just well done, Smallville. Like, we love making fun and poking fun at this show, as you've heard, but they almost always nail this family stuff so perfectly, and they did it here.
Well, and you know, it's weird now to watch this 14 years later, I think, because it just seemed like Jonathan Kent being gone from the show seemed so new at the time. And I think we all knew it was going to happen eventually because it's a Superman story. But, you know, like 14 years later, that scene in particular still has an effect on anybody who watches it. And I think that's part of why Vengeance ultimately means more to me than Reckoning did. Mm-hmm. Because even if it did have the cheesy stuff like the Birds of Prey jumps and the AccuView to the rescue, it had those moments for Clark and Martha and the family. And I thought Chloe and Lana and Lionel and Lex all had such rich stories in addition to the Kents. It was just very well crafted.
I found her desk like this when I got in this morning. I called her home, her cell. Looks like she pulled an Amelia Earhart.
She's never gonna let anyone find her now.
Yeah, well, I guess exile's the price you have to pay when you play judge, jury, and executioner.
Yeah.
Like, what really happened out there?
I should have listened to you, Chloe. You tried to warn me. I had my hand around that guy's throat. And I thought that if I just kept squeezing the life out of him, then it would make everything right again.
God, Clark. But you didn't.
No.
What made you stop?
My dad's voice. This is gonna sound weird, but I could hear him. He was the one who always kept me from going over the edge when I was too close.
It's too bad Andrea didn't step back in time. I think Metropolis could really use someone like her right now. Do you think you could ever do what she did? Play the mild-mannered reporter by day and a crime fighter by night?
Honestly, I'm kind of hoping I can find a way to not have to hide who I really am.
Vengeance got an 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 2 out of 5. I believe this might be where Neil's reviews are pretty consistently low.
Got really bitter at a certain point.
Yeah, well, he gave Reckoning, he gave the first half of Reckoning 5 out of 5, and the second half of it a 1 out of 5, which is harsh.
Was this when he was going through the phase of, like, I should be writing this show?
I don't know if we've gotten quite to that point yet.
Okay.
I think this episode, people have either forgotten about it, gets lost in the shuffle. People do probably remember it for this last scene, but forget the context, I think.
Or they just remember the AccuView thing, and they're like,
AccuView to the rescue. So with that being said, Craig, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Vengeance?
I give it an A, not an A+, because you know you did have AccuView to the rescue. And I mean, there were a few logic jumps, but as far as the moments for the characters and the effect on the series as a whole, I think it was pretty powerful, so I'm going to give it an A.
As for me, I'm going to give it a B+.
Fair.
definitely, like, the emotional stuff is what gives it that plus. That there is a lot of fun contrivances and, you know, birds of prey things we're joking about. But ultimately, I think it's really important for them to have an episode like this after such a monumental episode. I think about Star Trek The Next Generation. You have the two-parter Best of Both Worlds, where Captain Picard gets assimilated by the Borg, and it's the season finale, it's the season premiere. It's a lot of heavy stuff, right? But they follow it up with another episode called Family, where Picard goes back to Earth and he deals with his trauma that he just experienced, right? Which was a big deal back in episodic TV in the early 90s.
But we don't want to see a bunch of episodes of Captain Picard on Earth.
That's its own conversation. But there was very good. Very good. But there's only one. Only one in TNG, okay?
Okay.
So, but yes, that Picard needs to move it along, please. But anyway, that's where I kind of see this episode as. Like you can't have one without the other. This is like a necessary part. Just like Metamorphosis is like a necessary continuation of the pilot.
Even though everybody's hairstyles change.
Yes, and the letter jackets change and the sets change. But Vengeance is a necessary, you know, epilogue to Reckoning. And, you know, that's a great, in Smallville, you know, give it credit. It balanced episodic and story arc stuff very well.
Yes.
You know, because like almost, and you know, the CW shows do it, modern TV does it. Everything's almost like a chapter that you can't read by itself in a book, right? But Smallville's like, here's a story that takes place in the greater story we're telling, but it's still self-contained. Like, you could watch this episode by itself and still get it.
Yes, for sure.
So, B plus for me, A for you. Moving on to the tally board, we have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections, because she is a mole at a police department precinct. So that brings us to 23. Huh. We have an episode title set at episode Vengeance, being the Angel of Vengeance, as of course said and read in the episode. That brings us to 37. And we have a plus one for product placement Pete for the infamous AccuView contact lenses.
And the amount of time the camera just like,
like just dwells stays on it. Just stays. But you're right about the old spice and the car. I mean, it's
yeah.
Smallville. I don't know. It's fun. We laugh at it now. It's fun. I'm glad these things exist. They're fun. But that brings us to 8. So I don't know about that one. We'll see. But so finally, Bechdel test. Is this a pass or a fail, Craig? It's hard to say.
I'm thinking about it because
well, Martha definitely and not, Chloe talk about Clark,
but not in a romantic way.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I'll let you make the call. I'll always let the guest make the call when I'm on the fence.
I'm gonna say it passes because they're not talking about like romance or any of that stuff. They're also talking about Jonathan and his watch. I'm gonna say it passes right there.
All right, Bechdel test, pass it is. Well, there you have it, guys. The 101st episode of Smallville, now in the books. Craig, thank you so much for being on the show again. If people want to find you out there, of course, they probably know where, but tell them anyway.
KryptonSiteStillExists.com. No, it's just called KryptonSite. But you can find me there, KSite TV, and you can find everything else through that. So there you go.
Well, and I'm so glad that KryptonSite still exists because, you know, we have Superman shows again. You know, there was a gap there where there wasn't, but Supergirl, Krypton, it's gone now, but still. Superman and Lois coming. So, I mean, hey, Superman talk, Superman news. That's where you need
to go. And, you know, I think from what I know so far, I think Superman and Lois will appeal to the Smallville audience since a good portion of the show takes place in Smallville, and I would assume in a familiar house.
Do you think they should have switched out the truck, though, in the Smallville scene on Crisis? Because it's that old, you know, 1930s-looking red truck that we had in Elseworlds. Lois and Clark were there. I was like, that's clearly the Earth 38 pickup truck.
No, because how do we know Clark didn't just buy and fix up an old junker? It belonged to his grandfather. What was his name in Relic?
Hiram Kent, right?
Hiram Kent. Yeah.
Hiram Kent.
Yeah, that's where he got it from. Yeah,
which took place in 1954, apparently, now, according to the Jonathan Tombstone. So, anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnCch. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. We talk about movie franchises, old, new, reboots, remakes, sequels, and when franchises get fatigued, you can find us on Twitter at UFBEarth. And as for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S.
And I want to hear your Birds of Prey show, so you all give to the Patreon, and then you can listen to it, and then I need to do it so I can listen to it.
There you go. Yes, always hold on to Birds of Prey. This is actually a perfect episode to talk about during the Birds of Prey.
Exactly. No one does it better than the Birds of Prey.
That's right, except for James Bond. So it's a song reference to Nobody Does It Better. Anyway, all that said.
You knew I was lost.
That's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week talking about Tomb with not Linda Carter as Chloe's mom. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Casey Cochran, Lex Ledger, Tim Miller, Thomas Navin, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Rachel Miller, Catherine Emmerich, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Adam Solens, James Bandini II, Jonathan England, Joe Michael, Corey Moore, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Will Hunt, Nathan Rochacher, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Goso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, Anthony Anderson, Joey Deinberg, Fress Horshey, and Clunk Kant. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.